in the beloved town of Mansoul, what doth he but strengthen himself what he could to give fresh battle to the noble Prince Emmanuel? So then, now we must have another fight before the town of Mansoul is taken. Come up then to the mountains, you that love to see military actions, and behold by both sides how the fatal blow is given, while one seeks to hold and the other seeks to make himself master of the famous town of Mansoul. Diabolus, therefore, having withdrawn himself from the wall to his force that was in the heart of the town of Mansoul, Emmanuel also returned to the camp, and both of them, after their diverse ways, put themselves into a posture fit to give battle one to another. Diabolus, as filled with despair of retaining in his hands the victory, resolved to do what mischief he could, if indeed he could do any, to the army of the prince and to the famous town of Mansoul. For alas, it was not the happiness of the silly town of Mansoul that was designed by Diabolus, but the utter ruin and overthrow thereof, as now is enough in view. Wherefore he commands his officers that they should then, when they see that they could hold the town no longer, do it what harm and mischief they could, rending and tearing men, women, and children. For, said he, we had better quite demolish the place, and leave it like a ruinous heap, than so leave it that it may be an habitation for Emmanuel. Emmanuel, again, knowing that the next battle would issue in his being made master of the place, gave out a royal commandment to all his officers, high captains, and men of war, to be sure to show themselves men of war against Diabolus and all Diabolonians, but favorable, merciful, and meek to the old inhabitants of Mansoul. Bend, therefore, said the noble prince, the hottest front of the battle against Diabolus and his men. So the day being come, the command was given, and the prince's men did bravely stand to their arms, and did, as before, bend their main force against Eargate and Eygate. The word was then, Mansoul is won. So they made their assault upon the town. Diabolus also, as fast as he could, with the main of his power, made resistance from within, and his high lords and chief captains for a time fought very cruelly against the prince's army. But after three or four notable charges by the prince and his noble captains, Eargate was broken open, and the bars and bolts wherewith it was used to be fast shut up against the prince were broken into 1,000 pieces. Then did the prince's trumpet sound, the captains shout, the town shake, and Diabolus retreat to his hold. Well, when the prince's forces had broken open the gate, himself came up and did set his throne in it. Also he set his standard thereby upon a mount that before by his men was cast up to place the mighty slings thereon. The mount was called Mount Hearwell. There, therefore, the prince abode, to wit, hard by the going in at the gate. He commanded also that the golden slings should yet be played upon the town, especially against the castle, because for shelter thither was Diabolus retreated. Now from Eargate the street was straight even to the house of Mr. Recorder, that so was before Diabolus took the town, and hard by his house stood the castle, which Diabolus for a long time had made his irksome den. The captains therefore did quickly clear that street by the use of their slings, so that way was made up to the heart of the town. Then did the prince command that Captain Monerges, Captain Conviction, and Captain Judgment should forthwith march up the town to the old gentleman's gate. Then did the captains in most warlike manner enter into the town of Mansoul, and marching in with flying colors, they came up to the recorder's house, and that was almost as strong as was the castle. Battering rams they took also with them to plant against the castle gates. When they were come to the house of Mr. Conscience, they knocked and demanded entrance. Now the old gentleman, not knowing as yet fully their design, kept his gates shut all the time of this fight. Wherefore Bonerges demanded entrance at his gates, and no man making answer, he gave it one stroke with the head of a ram, and this made the old gentleman shake, and his house to tremble and totter. Then came Mr. Recorder down to the gates, and as he could, with quivering lips, he asked who was there. Bonaire just answered, "We are the captains and commanders of the great Shaddai and of the blessed Emmanuel, his son, and we demand possession of your house for the use of our noble prince." And with that, the battering ram gave the gate another shake. This made the old gentleman tremble the more, yet durst he not but open the gate. Then the king's forces marched in, namely, the three brave captains mentioned before. Now the recorder's house was a place of much convenience for Emmanuel, not only because it was near to the castle and strong, but also because it was large and fronted the castle, the den where now Diabolus was, for he was now afraid to come out of his hold. As for Mr. Recorder, the captains carried it very reservedly to him. As yet he knew nothing of the great designs of Emmanuel, so that he did not know what judgment to make, nor what would be the end of such thundering beginnings. It was also presently noised in the town how the recorder's house was possessed, his rooms taken up, and his palace made the seat of the war, and no sooner was it noised about, but they took the alarm as warmly, and gave it out to others of his friends, and, you know, as a snowball loses nothing by rolling, so in little time the whole town was possessed, that they must expect nothing from the prince but destruction. And the ground of the business was this. The recorder was afraid. The recorder trembled, and the captains carried it strangely to the recorder. So many came to see, but when they with their own eyes did behold the captains in the palace, and their battering rams ever playing at the castle gates to beat them down, they were riveted in their fears, and it made them all in amaze. And, as I said, the man of the house would increase all this, for whoever came to him or discoursed with him, nothing would he talk of, tell them, or hear, but that death and destruction now attended man's soul. "For," quoth the old gentleman, "you are all of you sensible that we all have been traitors to that once despised, but now famously victorious and glorious Prince Emmanuel. For he now, as you see, doth not only lie in close siege about us, but hath forced his entrance in at our gates. Moreover, Diabolus flees before him, and he hath, as you behold, made of my house a garrison against the castle where he is. I, for my part, have transgressed greatly, and he that is clean, it is well for him. But I say I have transgressed greatly in keeping silence when I should have spoken, and in perverting justice when I should have executed the same. True, I have suffered something at the hand of Diabolus for taking part with the laws of King Shaddai, but that, alas, what will that do? Will that make compensation for the rebellions and treasons that I have done and have suffered without gainsaying to be committed to the town of Mansoul? Oh, I tremble to think what will be the end of this so dreadful and so ireful a beginning." Now while these brave captains were thus busy in the house of the old recorder, Captain Execution was as busy in other parts of the town in securing the back streets and the walls. He also hunted the Lord Will-be-will sorely. He suffered him not to rest in any corner. He pursued him so hard that he drove his men from him and made him glad to thrust his head into a hole. Also this mighty warrior did cut three of the Lord Will-be-will's officers down to the ground. One was old Mr. Prejudice, he that had his crown cracked in the mutiny. This man was made by Lord Will-be-will keeper of Eargate and fell by the hand of Captain Execution. There was also one, Mr. Backward to All But Naught, and he also was one of Lord Will-be-will's officers, and was the captain of the two guns that once were mounted on the top of Eargate. He also was cut down to the ground by the hands of Captain Execution. Besides these two, there was another, a third, and his name was Captain Treacherous. A vile man this was, but one that Will-be-will did put a great deal of confidence in. But him also did this Captain Execution cut down to the ground with the rest. He also made a very great slaughter among my Lord Will-be-will's soldiers, killing many that were stout and sturdy, and wounding many that for Diabolus were nimble and active. but all these were Diabolonians. There was not a man, a native of Mansoul, hurt. Other feats of war were also likewise performed by other of the captains, as at Highgate, where Captain Goodhope and Captain Charity had a charge, was great execution done. For the Captain Goodhope, with his own hands, slew one Captain Blindfold, the keeper of that gate. This Blindfold was captain of 1,000 men, and they were they that fought with Mauls. He also pursued his men, slew many and wounded more, and made the rest hide their heads in corners. There was also at that gate Mr. Ill-Paws, of whom you have heard before. He was an old man and had a beard that reached down to his girdle. The same was he that was orator to Diabolus. He did much mischief in the town of Mansoul, and fell by the hand of Captain Goodhope. What shall I say? The Diabolonians in these days lay dead in every corner, though too many yet were alive in Mansoul. Now the old recorder and my lord understanding, with some others of the chief of the town, to wit, such as knew they must stand and fall with the famous town of Mansoul, came together upon a day, and after consultation had, did jointly agree to draw up a petition, and to send it to Emmanuel, now while he sat in the gate of Mansoul. So they drew up their petition to Emmanuel, the contents whereof were these: that they, the old inhabitants of the now deplorable town of Mansoul, confessed their sin, and were sorry that they had offended his princely majesty, and prayed that he would spare their lives. Unto this petition he gave no answer at all, and that did trouble them yet so much the more. Now all this while the captains that were in the recorder's house were playing with the battering rams at the gates of the castle to beat them down. So after some time, labor and travail, the gate of the castle that was called impregnable was beaten open, and broken into several splinters, and so a way made to go up to the hold in which Diabolus had hid himself. Then were tidings sent down to Eargate, for Emmanuel still abode there, to let him know that a way was made in at the gates of the castle of Mansoul. But oh, how the trumpets at the tidings sounded throughout the prince's camp! For that now the war was so near an end, and Mansoul itself of being set free. Then the prince rose from the place where he was, and took with him such of his men of war as were fittest for the expedition, and marched up the street of Mansoul to the old recorder's house. Now the prince himself was clad all in armor of gold, and so he marched up the town with his standard borne before him. But he kept his countenance much reserved all the way as he went, so that the people could not tell how to gather to themselves love or hatred by his looks. Now as he marched up the street, the townsfolk came out at every door to see, and could not but be taken with his person and the glory thereof, but wondered at the reservedness of his countenance, for as yet he spake more to them by his actions and works than he did by words or smiles. But also poor Mansoul, as in such cases all are apt to do, they interpreted the carriage of Emmanuel to them as did Joseph's brethren his to them, even all a quite contrary way. For, thought they, if Emmanuel loved us, he would show it to us by word or carriage, but none of these he doth. Therefore Emmanuel hates us. Now, if Emmanuel hates us, then Mansoul shall be slain. Then Mansoul shall become a dunghill. They knew that they had transgressed his father's law, and that against him they had been in with Diabolus, his enemy. They also knew that the Prince Emmanuel knew all this, for they were convinced that he was an angel of God, to know all things that are done in the earth, and this made them think that their condition was miserable, and that the good prince would make them desolate. And, thought they, what time so fit to do this in as now, when he has the bridle of Mansoul in his hand? And this I took special notice of, that the inhabitants, notwithstanding all this, could not, when they see him march through the town, but cringe, bow, bend, and were ready to lick the dust of his feet. They also wished 1,000 times over that he would become their prince and captain, and would become their protection. They would also one to another talk of the comeliness of his person, and how much for glory and valor he outstripped the great ones of the world. But, poor hearts, as to themselves, their thoughts would change, and go upon all manner of extremes. Yea, through the working of them backward and forward, man's soul became as a ball tossed, and as a rolling thing before the whirlwind. Now when he was come to the castle gates, he commanded Diabolus to appear, and to surrender himself into his hands. But oh, how loath was the beast to appear! How he stuck at it! How he shrank! How he cringed! Yet out he came to the prince. Then Emmanuel commanded, and they took Diabolus and bound him fast in chains, the better to reserve him to the judgment that he had appointed for them. But Diabolus stood up to entreat for himself that Emmanuel would not send him into the deep, but suffer him to depart out of man's soul in peace. When Emmanuel had taken him and bound him in chains, he led him into the marketplace, and there, before Mansoul, stripped him of his armor in which he boasted so much before. This now was one of the acts of triumph of Emmanuel over his enemy. And all the while that the giant was stripping, the trumpets of the golden prince did sound amain. The captains also shouted, and the soldiers did sing for joy. Then was Mansoul called upon to behold the beginning of Emmanuel's triumph over him in whom they so much had trusted, and of whom they so much had boasted in the days when he flattered them. Thus having made Diabolus naked in the eyes of Mansoul, and before the commanders of the prince, in the next place he commands that Diabolus should be bound with chains to his chariot wheels. Then leaving some of his forces, to wit, Captain Bonerges and Captain Conviction, as a guard for the castle gates, that resistance might be made on his behalf, if any that heretofore followed Diabolus should make an attempt to possess it. He did ride in triumph over him quite through the town of Mansoul, and so out at, and before the gate called Eye-Gate, to the plain where his camp did lie. But you cannot think, unless you had been there as I was, what a shout there was in Emmanuel's camp when they saw the tyrant bound by the hand of their noble prince and tied to his chariot wheels. And they said, "He hath led captivity captive. He hath spoiled principalities and powers. Diabolus is subjected to the power of his sword and made the object of all derision." Those also that rode reformades and that came down to see the battle, they shouted with that greatness of voice and sang with such melodious notes that they caused them that dwell in the highest orbs to open their windows, put out their heads, and looked down to see the cause of that glory. The townsmen also, so many of them as saw this sight, were, as it were, while they looked, betwixt the earth and the heavens. True, they could not tell what would be the issue of things as to them, but all things were done in such excellent methods, and I cannot tell how, but things in the management of them seemed to cast a smile towards the town, so that their eyes, their heads, their hearts, and their minds, and all that they had were taken and held while they observed Emmanuel's order. So when the brave prince had finished this part of his triumph over Diabolus, his foe, he turned him up in the midst of his contempt and shame, having given him a charge no more to be a possessor of Mansoul. Then went he from Emmanuel, and out of the midst of his camp, to inherit the parched places in a salt land, seeking rest, but finding none. Chapter 6. Now Captain Bonerges and Captain Conviction were, both of them, men of very great majesty. Their faces were like the faces of lions, and their words like the roaring of the sea. And they still quartered in Mr. Conscience's house, of whom mention was made before.